You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Disappearing ice is a big problem for northern communities, and maybe it's sad when polar bears have no ice for their food to hunt. But what if a shrinking ice cover at the polar sea could reach much further down? What if it drives more drought in California? That's the shocking science news from five scientists at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, and that's located just east of San Francisco. Here is the title: Future Loss of Arctic Sea Ice Cover Could Drive a Substantial Decrease in California's Rainfall. It was published December 5th in the top-ranked journal Nature Communications, just in time for the hugely destructive wildfires again right now in California. We reached the lead author, Ivana Sivanovic, from Lawrence Livermore. Ivana, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me here today. It's very exciting.
Well, it's exciting to have you here, too. Now, I know from looking at your resume that your paper didn't just come out of nowhere. You have been a young scientist who won awards, and you've been the lead author in several years of published works on ice, the Arctic, the atmosphere. What set you searching for long-range influences as far as California?
Well, I think this probably dates back to my PhD studies at Copenhagen in Denmark. There I was working with a group of scientists that were studying signals in Greenland ice cores. And what we saw there is that the changes that were happening in the Arctic were very strongly coupled to changes around pretty much the entire planet. So there was a very strong coupling between tropical proxies, tropical sediment cores, and cave records from around the world. There was a really good agreement between Greenland records and different proxies from really around the planet. So just coming from that background of past climate change, in which you know that Arctic sea ice and Arctic changes can be a really strong push for the atmosphere, it was a really natural continuation then when I started thinking about future climate and how much ice is going to be lost in the future to be interested in whether some of these scenarios can happen in the future too.
Before we dive into just how the Arctic connects to weather so far away, could you please talk to us about the so-called ridiculously resilient ridge that kept California in a terrible drought from 2012 to 2016?
Yes. So because the resilient ridge was basically a region of very high atmospheric pressure, which was parked off the west coast of the United States, up in the North Pacific. And what it did is that it steered the wet tropical air masses northward into Alaska and Canada. So instead of propagating eastwards towards California, that wet winter air went up and brought all the rain to Canada and Alaska and left California very dry. And usually we would, of course, have such ridges, and sometimes they would last a day or two, and sometimes if there was some blocking event, maybe they could last a couple of weeks. But in this case, we basically had that ridge for almost 4 years. And that's why Daniel Swain, a colleague from Stanford University, coined this name, ridiculously resilient ridge, because it just didn't seem to disappear ever.
So now, the link to the Arctic isn't simple. We will need to understand the word teleconnection. And we did talk about that on Radio EcoShock with Dr. Andres Holtz from Portland State University. He told us how changes in Antarctica could affect wildfires in South America, and that was due to teleconnection, he said. So could you please tell us again, what is teleconnection when it comes to atmospheric science?
I mean, it's a very broad term, but it's basically illustration of the fact that changes don't just happen at one place and then stay there, but it happens to change at one location in the planet. Can induce a change in some quite remote location somewhere else, something that you would not expect initially. You would just wonder, oh, why would Greenland be coupled with tropics? Why does tropical rainfall changes in line with temperature changes over in Greenland. So things like that, it almost looks like there's some jump in the atmosphere. Something is jumping from one place to another and inducing change. But actually, these jumps have a lot of science and things are very connected. But yeah, sometimes it happens that two places have a very extreme reaction versus the location in between those places don't have such a strong reaction. So that's why it looks like a jump, like a teleconnection. Like someone phoned from one region to another and told it, oh, why don't you respond now?
It's amazing, isn't it, that the Earth could work that way?
Yeah, it's amazing and it's beautiful. And in some ways, sometimes it's also smart, so to say, of our planet to do so. Because sometimes these teleconnections are means by which, for example, atmosphere can take care of some energy imbalance that happens somewhere else. In these simulations that we performed and studied that I will describe in today's conversation, we saw that imbalance that happens in a high latitude because of the loss of sea ice is compensated for example, in tropical Pacific. So we see a teleconnection between Arctic and tropical Pacific.
The new paper describes a two-step process, and I'd like to take it step by step. So the first is, quote, sea ice changes lead to reorganization of tropical convection. Could you please tell us how that first step works?
So, yeah, I just briefly touched on it just now. But what happens, what we saw in our simulations is that once the ice is lost, then high latitudes emit less energy to space than they used to when we had a larger sea ice extent. And in that sense, like, atmosphere needs to find some other place now to emit that excess energy. And the place where this happens is tropical Pacific. So changes in convection or in cloud cover happen in tropical Pacific in such a way that more outgoing radiation occurs over that region. And by that way, what happened in the Arctic gets compensated for. Now, in terms of actual mechanism, what happens is that in tropical Pacific, there are so-called convective margins. There are these areas which are incredibly sensitive to very small perturbations in sea surface temperatures or in wind fields or in pressure. So even when a very weak signal arrives from the Arctic due to the changes in sea ice loss, and this is what happens in our simulation, so just a really weak signal, very small change in temperature, arrives to the tropics, but this is sufficient to trigger change in convection over this convective margin region. So we then have a large scale cloud cover changes. That is the first step of teleconnection. Then once this had happened, then these changes in the amount of convection basically trigger a wave like motion, like a wave train of high and low pressure areas. And one such high pressure area ends up landing just there in the North Pacific off the west coast of the United States. And that's very similar like the ridge we saw during the last drought. So as I explained for the case of the previous drought, once that ridge is there, once that high pressure area is there, that means that California will be dry because all the winter storms will go further north.
It's like a chain of events.
Yes, it's really a two-step teleconnection. This series of events happen. So California is not influenced directly from the Arctic, but through the tropics.
Now, the four-year drought in California ended in the very wet winter of 2016-2017. Was there a change in the Arctic sea ice signal, or was it La Nina, or what?
Oh, I just have to clarify. So our study did not attempt to explain the previous drought. Our findings are really, really similar to previous droughts. So I can use it as an example when describing what has happened in our simulations. But basically what we did was to compare two sets of simulations with different ice extents, but those ice extents, well, first ice extent was similar to the conditions we had at the beginning of the century, and the second set of simulations had seasonally ice-free Arctic, so Arctic that is free of ice in the summer, And this is something that will probably occur in the next 2 to 3 decades. So this is predicted to happen by the mid-century. So basically, we're comparing conditions at the beginning of century and at mid-century. And as a difference between these two simulations, we see a situation in which reach that atmospheric pressure area in the North Pacific is more common and California is drier. But our study does not prove that most recent drought is due to sea ice, because as you can see, the sea ice extent we use to force our model are not the one corresponding to the years of drought. So this is, could be a really interesting step for the future research. But as it is now, we did not prove that sea ice had played a role in the most recent drought. And I would be very interested to find out if it did or not.
But it might play a role in future drought.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, now, listening to the media, we thought California's rain or lack of it was determined by El Nino or La Nina. Who were the first scientists to suggest that Arctic sea ice could be involved?
So I believe these were Lisa Sloan and Jacob Siebel. There was a study published in 2005 by these two scientists, and they were the first ones, as far as I know, to show that changes in Arctic sea ice cover could lead to precipitation changes over California. I think that their paper and their study did not get the attention it deserved. I think this was quite a breakthrough paper. If I try to guess why it didn't get the attention it deserved, I'm thinking it's because at the time maybe the view that Arctic can influence California felt to be in opposition with the more traditional view about, as you mentioned, El Nino or La Nina, or basically that California's precipitation variability is driven from the tropics. So I think it may have looked at that time that it's either Arctic or the tropics, and of course scientific community agreed that it was tropics because that was the main view for so many years. So what may be helpful now is that we have shown that Arctic influences California through the tropics. So this Arctic hypothesis does not have to be in opposition with tropical hypothesis. Although I'm sure there's still been a lot of debates and different kinds of criticism, and hopefully we can advance our understanding through those.
I'll put a link to that 2005 paper in my blog so that listeners can find it and look through it. I wanted to ask you, why are you most interested in, quote, the fast atmospheric response to sea ice changes in the first decades after the sea ice loss has occurred?
Well, I think there are different modeling approaches that we can have to investigate these questions. And there were a couple of studies published recently that looked at the response 1 century after the loss of sea ice. And I agree that that's an interesting question, but we were just thinking that maybe at this time, for some planning purposes, it may be very interesting to understand what happens sooner than that, what happens almost immediately after the sea ice loss. So something that is closer in the future as opposed to that far in the future. And that also affects the type of model you will use to investigate the problem. So if you want to know what's going to happen on a century timescale, this is a timescale where deep ocean changes will matter a lot. So you should certainly use a fully coupled model, which also has all the deep ocean processes involved. And because we looked only at these short timescales, then in our study it was justified to use a model that doesn't take into account deep ocean changes, but only surface ocean and atmosphere.
In this paper, you focused on impacts in California between December and February. Why those months?
Those are the months when California gets most of its precipitation, although yet truth to be told, March and April could also be interesting months. But we also, we got so much data out of our simulations, and you have to start somewhere. So the winter as the main rain season was very interesting to us, and this is where we saw a very strong signal. So the analysis was easier because changes that we saw were statistically significant. But I agree that this analysis should be extended to other seasons, and or at least extended into the entire rain season.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.
I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock. Our guest is Ivana Sivanovich. We are talking new science, how disappearing sea ice in the Arctic could affect people much farther south, right down to California. In this paper, you've chosen to focus on California. You were educated in Europe. Ivana, will the weather there change due to declining Arctic sea ice?
Yes, we see some changes in Europe, too. They're not as strong as the ones over California. And I think if I was to focus in the future on European changes, I think I would probably perform these simulations again and maybe with slightly different model. This is because Europe is influenced also a lot by changes in the North Atlantic, and I'm not entirely sure how well those were captured in the simulations I performed. So I think if I was to try to make more definite statements about Europe, I would perform some additional simulations to confirm what we saw in the ones made so far.
You have written several papers with Ken Caldera, and you worked at the Caldera Lab at Stanford.
Correct.
I know that Ken looked into trying to save the remaining Arctic ice by spraying stratospheric sulfate aerosols. Do you personally think geoengineering could delay the disappearance of sea ice and maybe even help agriculture in California?
This topic of geoengineering is so controversial that at times I'm even afraid to talk about it because I don't want to be misunderstood. Like, one of my main fears is that once we start talking about geoengineering, that people will think that then no action should be taken in terms of cutting the actual emission. So that's one of the big fears. And then another fear is also, if we speak about geoengineering, that people will think that some methods that would make a really large ecological catastrophes are acceptable. So I guess, you know, like, I think those are the two big warnings about geoengineering. Like, if one would use it, would it be possible to use it in some conscious way? Would it be possible? Actually, would it be possible? That would be the first question. Would it actually have any impact, any good impact? Would it not have bad consequences? Would there be such method that would not harm the ecosystems? And would this be seen as then as a reason not to cut down emissions, which would be a bad thing? So there are lots of ethical constraints. I did perform in my career some geoengineering simulations because I was interested how the system responds to these types of forcings. I saw them in partly just like some idealized experiments, not necessarily like something one should do. I heard of a really nice geoengineering experiment happening in Siberian tundra in which one scientist is trying to bring more grazing animals so that permafrost would again become covered with certain type of vegetation which could protect it longer. I think that kind of geoengineering could be a nice geoengineering because it's ecosystem friendly. It's not disrupting the things around it. I also heard of idea that one could just, during a very cold month, spray more water over the existing sea ice and then make sea ice thicker, which would then possibly make it last longer. So this is obviously not something that could be done too large scale, but maybe over some chosen areas where you want to maintain sea ice longer for polar bears, maybe in the future, something like that is possible. But yeah, I'm not so optimistic in any sort of way about spraying the atmosphere. I just don't have a good opinion about that approach.
I share your concerns. You know, it's a very difficult topic. I'm curious, does the work that you're doing and this paper have any relationship with the studies done by Jennifer Francis at Rutgers on sea ice loss and the way that changes the jet stream?
I really loved the work that Jennifer Francis had performed. I'm sorry that their work encountered some harsh criticism at certain times, and I think that's a bit unfair because when you're first to suggest something, then it's natural that other people should just build on it. That they discovered, they saw something new, they told the scientific community, here this is, look, this is interesting, this should be investigated further. They suggested one possible explanation, and then it just somehow blew up. And I think that was not fair to them. That was the first study, and being first is not easy. I didn't perform analysis in my simulations that would show whether the jet had become wavier or not, like suggested in their study. I would like to do that in the future and find this out. So far, things I saw in my study did not contradict Jennifer Francis and Stephen Vavros suggested in their paper.
And you have had an interest in past abrupt climate changes. Do you personally think we could experience another abrupt climate change, say within 100 years or so? Is that possible at all?
I think it's possible. I think what we are seeing now with Arctic sea ice is quite abrupt. Already, yes, I think there are such tipping points in climate system. I sincerely hope we avoid them, but yeah, we are pushing the system at all so many different places, and yet there could be some very, very abrupt response by a number of those. I liked, there was one discussion by Peter Humbert who mentioned like a sleeping dragon who can be awakened by what we are doing. I think there's definitely a chance for something like that. I mean, you know, there are a couple of critical things. There is permafrost, there are ice sheets, there is obviously the sea ice. There have been some suggestions that ocean circulation could abruptly change. So yeah, there are a couple of places where some abrupt shifts could happen. I don't know if they will. I certainly hope they won't.
Yes, we all do. Now, by the time a paper has been reviewed and published, many authors are already working on a follow-up or a new project. What are you working on now?
Well, my life took just a little bit different turn recently. Privately, I became a mother, so I'm working on my son at the moment. But there are many exciting topics coming out of here, and I'm slowly getting back into all of this. But I'm not right on jumping on the next new thing. But yeah, I mean, there are many, many directions that I would like to take this into. One would be understanding whether we can somehow decipher if the sea ice loss played a role in the recent California drought. Other would be this question about California fires, whether there could be also some link. In general, like understanding precipitation over California, it is a quite tricky problem. And, you know, what we did in sea ice study was basically we just took one element of that problem. We just showed what the sea ice does, but there are these multiple factors. So for the overall answer of what's going to happen in the future in California, you need to consider other factors than the sea ice. And those other factors may offset or may make stronger what the sea ice is doing. And that's also something that I would be very interested in doing. Then it would be great to perform our simulations with different models. And so there's really tons of ideas. Ideas are not missing, just the time.
From the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, we've been speaking with scientist Ivana Sivanovic. She's the lead author of a new paper called Future Loss of Arctic Sea Ice Cover Could Drive a Substantial Decrease in California's Rainfall. Find links to that paper and other things we've talked about in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Ivana, thank you so much for helping us out here on the program.
Sure, thank you for having me here. This was lots of fun.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
www.ecoshock.org.